good afternoon to you. This is a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today. And today we're going to be getting a preview of this week's Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. And that's featured John Kropik, who's going to be talking about yellow cedar trees. Callie Connerton from UAS will be here to highlight next week's Banff Mountain Film Festival. We're going to learn about the Girl Scouts 24th Annual Auction. And the Portland-based improvisers B&B will be here to preview their shows that are happening this weekend. That's all coming up with Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, all that other great stuff, some music, everything happening here on Juno Afternoon. And it's all happening right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Stephen Emmons, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. Utah County must redraw decades-old election boundaries because they violate equal protection for members of the Navajo Nation. A federal judge ruled the San Juan County Commission districts are unconstitutional. The decision stems from a suit filed by the Navajo Nation in 2012, arguing the commission districts, created 30 years ago after a mandate from the Department of Justice, are unbalanced. U.S. District Judge Robert Shelby ruled the county failed to update its election boundaries according to federal redistricting rules. The judge said the county's decisions were based on race. The county made minor adjustments to the boundaries in 2011. The San Juan Record reports it's unclear whether the county will be able to redraw the boundaries in time for the November general election. The Navajo Nation has filed a brief in federal court affirming its opposition to the name of the Washington, D.C. NFL team. A federal judge last year upheld the cancellation of the team's trademark to the name, and at least one Navajo tribal member is a plaintiff in the ongoing case. Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports.
The Navajo Nation says the mental health and well-being of its people would be at stake if Pro Football Incorporated were to retain the trademark and continue using the name. Navajo Nation President Russell Begay says it was important for the tribe to speak out.
We want to say to the world out there, especially the sports world, is that don't use designations that are degrading our people, our proud nation, and to be singled out and degraded this way, you know, we just have to be a part of that.
The Navajo Nation Council, the tribe's Human Rights Commission, and the Diné Medicine Men's Association also opposed the use of the name. The team's owner, Daniel Snyder, however, has said he won't ever change the name. He argues the court's decision infringes on his First Amendment rights and hurts business. The trademark cancellation wouldn't go into effect until the team has exhausted the federal appeals process. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The head of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee says the Bureau of Indian Education is broken. Republican Senator John Barrasso of Wyoming says confusing bureaucracy makes it almost impossible to improve schools. He introduced legislation to make the BIE an independent agency within the Department of the Interior. In an address to the National Indian Affairs Association, Barrasso says the BIE has languished as part of the Bureau of Indian Affairs. Under the bill, the Senate would appoint a director for the new agency. Barrasso says the streamlined body would be more accountable and more capable of meeting the needs of Native American students. Minnesota officials might remove several historic paintings in the Capitol building because they portray Native Americans in a negative light. A panel of lawmakers and others recommends moving the turn of the 20th century paintings to another part of the Capitol. One painting depicts the signing of the Traverse des Sioux Treaty. The event has since become a symbol of dishonest dealings by the federal government that culminated in armed conflict and ultimately the hanging of 38 Dakota men. In addition, the paintings depict the wrong tribe. A painting in a key hearing room shows a battle that followed the treaty signing. Another painting shows a Catholic missionary beside the Mississippi River baptizing Native Americans. Most of the paintings in question were commissioned by the building's architect, Cass Gilbert. Experts say at best they represent a romanticized European view of historic events. The review of the art collection comes as the state is renovating the Capitol building. More than 2 years ago, Governor Mark Dayton proposed taking a second look at the paintings that have outdated notions of historic events. Some historians say the paintings are a valuable reflection of how people viewed events at the time. The Capitol is host to lawmakers and dignitaries, but also thousands of visitors from the general public every year. A final decision on the paintings is expected this fall. For National Native News, I'm Stephen Emmons.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. If you or a loved one suffer from alcohol addiction, hear how recovery is possible from those who've had their day one at NativeNews.net.
Native Voice One. The Native American Radio Service.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. It's easy to share a little of your PFD with Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are dozens of nonprofits that you can support in Juneau alone, including KTOO Public Media. The application period for the PFD begins January 1st and runs through March 31st. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
Welcome back to the KTO studios, and here the forecast for tonight is calling for rain showers. Cloudy tomorrow with a chance of showers in the morning, and then rain for Saturday night. Sunday, rain again, and same for Sunday night, and mostly cloudy skies as we head into next week, Monday and Monday night. Joining me now in the studio is John Kropik, who's a student at UAF, based out of UAS. Right, Zach, I got that right?
Yep, that's right. I spent some time in Fairbanks, but mostly based here in Juneau.
So your degree that you're working on is through UAF, but you're based in UAS probably a lot because a lot of your research has to do with trees that are located here in Southeast Alaska.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So tell me about it. It's yellow cedar trees is what you're working on.
Yep. I think a lot of people in Juneau and Southeast Alaska know about yellow cedar trees and sort of how economically important they are in our region, how culturally valuable. But I think what a lot of people don't know is that there's actually all these pockets of yellow cedar hiding out in our woods right here around Juneau. And so there's maybe about a dozen or so cedar stands that appear to have just gotten started in fairly recent time right here in Juneau.
Yeah, we were describing it, and I was like, you know, it's that one lake out by Cowie. You're like, yes, Cedar Lake, Andy, Cedar Lake.
Well, what confused me is there's actually a couple cedar patches on lakes out there, and to me, Cedar Lake was the obvious one, so I kind of had to think about it. I was like, man, this guy really knows about, like, all the yellow cedar. Is he talking about this one out by this lake? But the Cedar Lake one.
No, I've run into them, and I'm sure folks who, you know, kind of hike around here, which is a majority of the people listening, I'm sure.
Right.
You run into them every now and then. They're just such an unusual tree compared to just the trunk of them is so unusual compared to the spruce or hemlock that you normally run into, these really large trees. They're that smooth kind of papery bark.
Right.
It's so satisfying to rub them, slap them, and, you know, touch them. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And, yeah, they're kind of a much friendlier tree than especially spruce. Like, they have this really great, soft, drooping foliage rather than the prickly spruce needles and the smooth bark. And so
gray, kind of smooth gray bark.
Right, just a really pretty tree.
They are, yeah. It's really fun to run into them. And they've seemed – I always thought they were kind of only on that one lake and then only, like, maybe in the Ketchikan area, but your research is proving that they're in a lot of other places.
Yeah, so what we think is that right here in Juneau, we're at the leading edge of an ongoing range expansion. And so as a lot of people might or may not know, about 20,000 years ago, this whole area was covered in ice. As the ice pulled back, all the other trees around here seem to fill in the landscape relatively quickly. So, you know, 10,000 years ago, we were ice-free. There were spruce and hemlock that showed up. But yellow cedar, they're kind of just the slow growing, slow migrating, long-lived tree that maybe works on a little bit of a slower time scale than some of the other species, and it seems to have just arrived here in Juneau lately. And so the big question is, when exactly did they arrive, and are they filling in the landscape? And so that's what I'm going to be talking about at the fireside lecture tonight.
How do they migrate?
So that's actually a great question and something that's kind of understudied right now. But we think that The seeds are only dispersed by the wind. There's no known animal dispersers currently. And they have these kind of relatively heavy heavy seeds compared to the other species with not much of a seed wing that can catch the wind and get it very far. So it seems like they just kind of creep along, and then they might wait for a big fall storm. Like they release their seeds in the fall, and then that's, you know, when we get those southerly taku strong winds, and so then the seeds can blow across the landscape, and then especially when they blow across the snowpack, they might be able to get a little bit farther than if they didn't have
snow. Oh, I see, snowpack. Yeah, so because it seems like I've seen them around lakes more than anywhere else, but is that just where I've happened to see them? Or?
Well, I think that might just, kind of be where you saw them, but they that does bring up an interesting point in that they tend to be most competitive in wetter habitats. So in kind of the muskeg area, forested wetlands, they are able to just persist in those less ideal habitats as compared to spruce and hemlock, which do really well on our well-drained slopes, which are a little bit more nutrient-rich with lots of water flushing through them. But cedar, because they're so slow-growing and they have some unique nutrient acquisition strategies, they can kind of just persist in those wet areas and grow really slowly and creep along. And so those are some of the other things we'll be talking about is, you know, do they mostly occur in these wet areas, or are they able to also get into the more sloped areas where you typically see spruce and hemlock?
Is there an area of the world where if you went yellow cedar, would be just, I mean, if they have a stronghold somewhere, like in British Columbia or something, or?
Yeah, so even if you just go not too far south of us, that's sort of the southern, southeast Alaska, and then British Columbia is really the heart of the range. I think also a lot of people may have heard of this, but the trees are actually dying off relatively rapidly farther south. And it appears to be a climate-related thing, that as the winter snow is going away, the roots of the trees are losing some insulation that's important to protect the roots from cold freezing temperatures. And so farther south, in the heart of their range, they're dying. But then we have this kind of unique opportunity up here where they appear to have just gotten here and are still happy and healthy and maybe filling in. So that might be even one more reason why this story of cedar in Juneau is so exciting.
Yeah, I, that was the next thing I was going to say, this idea of them moving forward and moving northward. I guess it does say something a little bit, potentially may lead to saying something a little bit bigger about what's happening with our overall climate.
Right, exactly. And as I'll offer as kind of a twist at the end of my presentation is, you know, there is this optimism that cedar just got here in Juneau. They're filling in on the landscape. But when we look around for regeneration and looking, are the seedlings pushing forth past the boundaries? We're not seeing a lot right now, and it actually seems like back when it was a little bit colder and snowier is when most of the cedar got started around here and grew up to maturity. And so there's that's just a big question right now is what's the future of these stands? Mm-hmm. And so I'm planning on speculating a little bit on that tonight and trying to figure out what's going on with that.
Does the spread of yellow cedar also potentially link to future spread of other types of animals that may rely on that tree? Are there bird species or squirrels or things like that that may rely on it?
The one thing that we know yellow cedar are really important habitat for is actually nesting bats.
Cool. That's the coolest answer ever. Yeah. I had no idea the answer would be that cool.
Right. Yeah. Not what you might think.
But, I love it.
And it's actually the dead trees, that beautiful smooth gray bark you were talking about. When the trees die and the bark starts to slough off, the bats will get up underneath that bark to nest. And so that's pretty cool.
Wow. That's really cool. Right. Yeah. So, wow, that's really a fascinating part of it. Well, what was your journey of getting interested in yellow cedar? How did you get interested in that as a subject of study?
Right. There are these really great researchers at the Forest Service here in town, Paul Hennin and Dave DeMore, who these guys have spent much of their career working on yellow cedar. And they're just these fantastically supportive guys and really excited about Cedar. And so I came to them and told them that I was trying to do something forest ecology related for my master's. And honestly, if they told me that I should be studying Sitka spruce, that's what I would be studying.
Right.
And so they got me going with my project. And as I've been going, I'm just sort of getting more and more immersed in cedar and can see with all these unanswered questions about cedar and cedar around Juneau that I could potentially keep working on it for quite a while, which would be exciting.
Yeah. Does cedar have commercial implications and commercial uses, or are there restrictions to how they can be used around here, that sort of thing?
Yeah, they're actually the most commercially valuable timber species in the region, particularly for foreign export. So the some of the Asian countries, and in particular Japan, they really love yellow cedar from our region. They had a
for furniture and things like that, or
yeah, and for exterior construction too, because they're the wood is so decay resistant. So I think a lot of people in Juneau may know that the new Sea Alaska building, all the outside is yellow cedar because it's such a decay-resistant wood. So in a really rainy climate, it's great for exterior construction.
It sort of naturally ages and gets kind of gray, but it stays really structurally sound. Yeah,
right, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, they are this really commercially valuable species, and then they're extremely culturally valuable. The Alaska natives have used them for millennia for carving and weaving. And so tonight at my talk, I have a friend who's a weaver, and I'm going to bring in some of her items that she's weaved. And we'll just try to sort of put yellow cedar in this context of this regionally important tree and talk about why it's so exciting that there might be more yellow cedar around Juneau.
Well, it sounds like an exciting talk, a great word to use for it. John Propick is going to be talking tonight at the Friday Fireside Lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Usually there's two shows. Is that happening tonight, 6:30 and 8 o'clock?
Yep, exactly.
Okay, and they're always such great talks because you get, as you're already saying, you get these, you know, it's going to be multimedia, really. You'll have someone there with actual cedar. You'll have, of course, I'm guessing you'll have kind of a slideshow or PowerPoint-type presentation.
Right, exactly. Lots of photos of pretty yellow cedar trees, lots of maps of where they grow. So if you're curious where yellow cedar is around Juneau, you can find out tonight.
Very cool. All right, John Kropik, thanks so much for coming in and have a great talk tonight out at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Again, it's happening at 7:30 and at 8 o'clock, and it's on yellow cedar trees here in Southeast Alaska.
Yep. Great. Thanks so much
John.
For having me.
Coming up next is Callie Connerton. Callie, how are you?
I'm great. How are you doing today, Andy?
I'm terrific, Callie, at UAS, and you're here today. Of all the things you could talk about, because you're involved in so many things, but you're talking today about the Banff Mountain Film Festival happening next week, right?
Yeah, no, I'm a student governor president out at UAS, and we are really stoked to bring the Banff Mountain Film Festival once again back to Juneau. And it's going to be a blast. It's happening next Wednesday, and we have a bunch of awesome films lined up for the community of Juneau.
So this is something, I think, what is this, maybe the sixth or seventh year, maybe even longer?
It's longer. It's over 10 years.
It's over 10 years.
Over 10 years we've brought it to Juneau.
And it fits so well. There's so many people are so into mountain lifestyle and all that here in Juneau that, of course, all those films make so much sense to everyone that's here, right? I mean,
it totally makes sense. I mean, we have, I can be on the ski hill in 20 minutes, on the lift, in 30. We can be mountain biking or hiking in, 10 minutes from my house, or on the water in 5 if I jump in and you know, say no to the boat. But,
right.
You know.
So give me a little bit of it. Let's not, we can't give away everything, of course.
Can't give away everything.
But let's give us a little bit of a sneak preview of what the different films are this year.
Okay, so we have a bunch lined up. As always, some of them are super short, some of them are a little longer. But we have a couple. We have a rafting video. Of course, we have a couple skiing videos. Thankfully, we had a better season than last season at the Eagle Crest. We had biking videos. One about horses, canoeing. We have ice climbing. We have one that's women's speed climbing, which is really cool.
Speed climbing.
Rock climbing.
Right, I know. But it sounds like, that sounds scary.
It's not on ice. It's not the ice climbing, speed ice climbing.
I guess I've seen competitions where they even have man-made walls, where they scale these man-made walls.
This is natural. This is natural. This is out in the wilderness, and I'm really stoked about this, you know.
I see these, whenever I watch these films, I always go like, that's amazing, but... Boy, I'm so far away from being able to do
it. You could do it. You just, you know, it's the first step. Obviously, they didn't go from,
watching.
You know, sitting, you know, drinking a beer, Alaskan beer, to climbing a mountain, you know, with, you know, at speed ascent. But
I know. I guess I shouldn't take it as a...
One step at a time.
I should take
you
it more.
You put one forward.
Right, that's one step forward. An encouraging thing.
Yes.
So any other ones that are, yeah.
So, I mean, we have, yeah, that's the basic concepts of the lineup. But, so it's next Wednesday, March 2nd.
Okay.
It starts at 6, or the doors will open at 6:30. The movies will start at 7, which means if you're on time with Juno Casual, you'll be there at 7. The movies will start at 7, though, just so you guys know.
But fun prizes.
There are door
fun
prizes.
Banff things like
is,
that.
Yeah, Banff is bringing door prizes, as always. It's going to be great. And then if you are 5 and under, you are free. If you're a student, it's $10. And if you're a general public, it is $15. So we're really stoked about it. And you can get tickets at the Rookery, Foggy Mountain, NAO, Hearthside Books, Aurora Project, student accounts, and, of course, at the door.
And so what does the money go towards?
Okay, so it is a fundraiser for the UAS student government, and we sponsor the clubs on campus. We sponsor different events. We are the student voice for the campus, and we do have a conference this weekend where we are, along with the student leaders from all over the university system, we are advocating for the university with the legislature, and that's actually happening this weekend right before Banff. So it's a huge weekend for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what sort of issues are you specifically working on and bringing forward to the legislature?
Well, we, as a collective, we decide on the very, you know, the basic issues, but really, you know, we just are so grateful to the legislature for funding the university, and we really would like to see that continued. We want to have a great economic and stable environment for, you know, economy for us to live in, for, you know, grandkids to live, for their grandkids to live in, and them to also, you know, grow old. And so we really want to focus on making Alaska's universities somewhere where all the bright students want to go there. And all the students want to stay in Alaska and be in Alaska and be able to do research in Alaska and be able to do the fields that they, their dreams, you know, where they can pursue their dreams.
Yeah,
in
absolutely.
Alaska.
Well, I mean, so many people I've known have done that exact thing, including John, who just came through here. And, you know, there's so much great, positive mental energy happening because of the university system here in Alaska. It's really cool to hear that the students are kind of banding together to show their support to the legislature during these kind of, you know, tough times, right?
Yeah.
Obviously, the legislature is going through looking for lots of different places to see where funding is going to come from.
And you guys do have a successful graduate here in the K-3 station, Andy Bartholomew, actually has graduated from UAF.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Another
yeah.
successful, brilliant mind.
Yes, who stayed here in Alaska and is contributing to the community and contributing to the state, absolutely. So it's the Banff Mountain Film Festival. It's happening Wednesday, March 2nd. The movies start at 7, doors open at 6.
6:30.
And it's $15 at the door, and there's discounts for students, and if you're under 5, you get in for free.
I'm sorry, Andy, you are over 5.
I know. Is there a senior discount?
Yeah, it's $20.
Okay, oh.
And you have $5 discount.
Just one more time, rundown on just some of the highlights of what the films are going to, which different films are playing.
So we have two different ski films. We have a biking film. We have one about horses, canoeing, ice climbing, women's speed ascent, rafting. Also going back in time. The rafting one goes back in time, so that's really cool.
That's cool.
But, yeah, so we have about 10 lined up. We're really excited.
Very exciting. Okay, so it's the Banff Film Festival, 10 films for the price of one, and it's all happening at Centennial Hall.
Yes, so it's at Centennial Hall this Wednesday. You're supporting the University of Alaska Student Government, which also, you know, we love putting on this community event because we at the University of Alaska Southeast love being involved in the Juno community. It's really important to us. You know, I was talking with Chancellor Caulfield, and he loves community engagement, and he really wants to be a part of that. So,
are there up-and-coming clubs happening out at the university that people should know about, that like students should know about, or
There's so many different clubs.
Yeah.
We have a creators club. We have, and actually, we just had, and I'm going to pronounce this wrong, so I'm just going to go with the fungi club, the mushrooms mycology club.
Fungi, I think fungi is right.
Is doing this new new thing, so that's really exciting. We have our gaming club, which is really exciting, and also has brought students to UAS. So if you are a gamer and you're in high school, we have a gaming club. You should come join our gaming
club. That's
cool.
Yeah.
But we have a lot of different clubs on campus that are very active. Psychology club, pre-med.
Some are specifically tied to maybe subject matters, and then some are just tied to fun stuff to do or just interesting topics.
And the thing is that anyone can make a club. It has to be 5 students, and student government supports you with funding and all that stuff. So it's a really great organization, and we're really excited. We're also passed many different resolutions, one on guns on campus. We passed a resolution in support of the budget at the University of Alaska, and, you know, keeping student learning as our top of our mission statement, keeping that, you know, top focus is student learning. So we also packed an Indigenous Peoples Day resolution right actually before Governor Walker did his. So it was pretty great on timing.
Yeah, very good. You got in there first here.
Yeah, okay, very good.
You guys were cutting edge.
And we have a great Native Rural Resource Center that is just extremely great for those Native students on campus. And they brought one of our student government members at the time was very involved in the NRSC, and he brought that to us.
Well, that's cool. I always like to just find out more about what's happening on campus there, you know, anytime there's someone from UAS that comes in that's really connected to the campus. It's always great to just know what's going on because there's so much happening out there. Yeah.
And we just did our Winterfest, which is our and there was a polar bear plunge where we raised money for AWARE, which is amazing. There's bonfires going all the time, and we're bringing students actually coming, prospective students coming to bring them to Juno and see this is what an amazing campus it is. You should choose UAS.
Cool.
Support the university.
And then one way you can support the university programs that are going on there is by going to a film. Such an easy way, such a fun way to support. You go to the Banff Mountain Film Festival. It's happening.
Bring your whole family, all your friends.
Happening Centennial Hall this Wednesday, March 2nd. The movie starts at 7, doors open at 6:30. Callie Connerton out from UAS. Thanks so much for coming.
Thanks, Andy.
Great to see you, and thanks so much for letting us know everything that's happening out there. Coming up right now, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 26th of February, 2016. 1917, on this date, the first commercial jazz record was recorded by the original Dixieland Jazz Band, released by Victor. Dixieland Jazz Band, one step on the A side. On the B side was the Livery Stable Blues. 5 white musicians from New Orleans, clarinet, piano, drums, trombone, and cornet. 1919, on this day, President Woodrow Wilson signed a bill to establish Grand Canyon National Park, including more than 1 million acres of land in northwestern Arizona. In that year, 44,000 people visited the new park. These days, about 5 million every year. It's the birthday of the man who said there is one thing stronger than all the armies in the world, and that is an idea whose time has come. Victor Hugo, born in Besançon, France, 1802, author of The Hunchback of Notre Dame. It made him a celebrity when he was still in his 20s, and he used his celebrity to advocate for political causes, including denouncing the autocratic regime of Napoleon III, who declared Victor Hugo an enemy of the state, and Hugo managed to flee the country, went to Brussels, lived in exile for the next 20 years, during which time he wrote Les Miserables, about a poor Parisian who steals a loaf of bread, spends 19 years in jail for it, and after his release becomes a successful mayor and businessman, and then is imprisoned once again for a minor crime in his past. Book was very popular. Hugo returned to Paris, was elected to the Senate, and when he died at the age of 82, 2 million people showed up for his funeral, his procession through the streets of the city. Here's a poem for today by Dana Gioia, Guide to the Other Gallery. This is the hall of broken limbs where splintered marble athletes lie beside the arms of cherubim. Nothing is ever thrown away. These butterflies are set in rows, so small and gray inside their case. They look alike now, I suppose. Death makes most creatures commonplace. These portraits here of the unknown are hung three high, frame piled on frame, each potent soul who craved renown, immortalized without a name. Here are the shelves of unread books, millions of pages turning brown. Visitors wander through the stacks, but no one ever takes one down. I wish I were a better guide. There's so much more that you should see. Rows of bottles with nothing inside, displays of locks which have no key. You'd like to go? I wish you could. This room has such a peaceful view. Look at that case of antique wood without a label. It's for you. A poem by Dana Gioia, Guide to the Other Gallery, from his collection 99 Poems, published by Grey Wolf Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices, subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org, and supported by Staples, offering tech services for small businesses like PC setup and repair, some tasks completed by the next day. Staples.com/tech services. Staples, make more happen. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Comes from the Treadwell Ice Arena, kicking off the annual Rainforest Old Timers Hockey Tournament February 6th through the 28th. This tournament brings in more than 100 adult skaters and their families from all over Alaska and the Yukon, including teams from Whitehorse, Anchorage, Juneau, Fairbanks, Petersburg, and Homer. Can't wait until the 26th? Stop in and watch a friendly sister game on Thursday, February 25th from 8 until 9 p.m. with Whitehorse versus Juneau. These games are open to the public and will have light concessions available. For more information, call Treadwell Ice Arena at 586-0410.
And welcome back to the KTOO studios. Andy Klein with you, and I've been joined by Sue Perlis and Tara Lee Reese Ellis of the Girl Scouts. Thanks so much for coming in, Girl Scouts of Alaska.
Hi, Andy. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. It's great to have you here again. We've talked before, and we've got lots to talk about, but let's start first off with the 24th annual auction happening. That's tomorrow night, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Tomorrow night at the Jack, Girl Scouts of Alaska, to support Girl Scouting in Southeast Alaska. Lots of fun auction items to bid on. I think the favorite one I'm looking at is dinner on the cruise ships that come in.
Oh, is that right? That's a really cool thing.
I'm pretty excited. My kids are like, Mom, please. But we're pretty excited. It's tomorrow night, 6 p.m. It's $40 per ticket, 21 and older.
Is it, this is probably one of the major fundraising events that you guys do here in Southeast Alaska or in Juneau.
Yes, this is our basic annual fundraiser just for the scouting and stuff.
Yeah, and so where does the money go towards, or what kind of activities does it go towards here in Juneau?
The funds that come in from the auction go primarily to summer camp.
There's a Girl Scout coming in right now. Come
Absolutely.
On in here.
And this is where your funds go.
You can go right there on that microphone. How you doing?
Good.
What's your name?
Brian.
Bronwyn. Hi, Bronwyn. How are you doing?
Good.
Well, it's great to have you here. Hey, I'm going to move this monitor so I can see your face. Hello. There you are. Well, we were just talking about the auction coming up, which you're going to help with, I'm sure.
Yeah,
right?
I am.
All right. What are you doing for it?
I'm kind of undecided, but I'm probably going to help set up.
Okay, setup is always
right.
good. Sometimes I think setup maybe is better than cleanup sometimes, you know? Sometimes cleanup,
yeah.
You got to stay there a little late, you know? So yeah. We were just talking about where the money's going towards, and Sue was just describing some of the programs.
Exactly. The funds that are raised at the auction go to help Girl Scouts in Southeast Alaska, but they primarily go to help with summer camp. And we offer summer camp in about 15 communities in Southeast Alaska where counselors fly in and bring the Girl Scout program to communities. And we offer it at family-friendly prices, but also every girl is welcome. So we don't want to exclude anybody because their family has difficult financial circumstances. So lots of what we call camperships, which are scholarships for girls going to camp, lots of camperships are available, and we would like to invite every girl listening to think about coming to Girl Scout camp this summer.
So how long does the camp last? Is it overnight? Is it, you know, tell me the details on the camps.
Sure. In Juneau, we have day camp, and it's at the university. It's the second and third week of July. So it runs from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday for 2 weeks straight.
Cool.
And
okay.
You can choose to see which week to go to or not. And then this year, a resident camp, we're transitioning to take girls up to Anchorage so they can have the wilderness experience. So it's we have a great summer planned.
And then, Bronwyn, I understand there's something else happening that's exciting tomorrow. Do you know what's arriving tomorrow by barge?
No.
You don't know yet?
No. Wait, cookies?
I think it's the cookies.
Yay!
I think all the cookies are coming up on the barge tomorrow.
Yay!
So this is a big time for all the Girl Scouts, right? You got to get out there.
Yeah, you got to deliver the cookies and sort them and stuff like that.
So have you already taken all the orders?
Yeah.
Okay. Did you get a lot this year?
Not too many.
Oh, no? Oh, well, but I bet all told, though, I bet across the whole Girl Scouts, I bet there's a ton of cookies coming, right?
Hundreds of thousands of boxes. Hundreds of thousands of boxes.
Amazing.
And tomorrow morning is what's called the sort. The cookies get delivered by barge down at the docks, and they'll get sorted tomorrow. Each of the pallets will get broken up. They'll be sorted tomorrow, and the troop leaders will each pick up the cookies for their troop.
What troop are you in?
Troop 4036.
And is that a certain part of town?
I don't know.
No.
So Troop 4036 is cadets. The troop leader is Joan Pardes and Julie Copens. They have been together since Davies. They are basically a downtown troop, or they kind of change their location as they meet each year. They are amazing troop. They go to White Horse every year with their cookie profits. That's one of their goals that they have set. I'm not
sure. Have you done that before?
We've been to White Horse twice.
And what do you do up there?
We ride horses and we get to see the sled dogs and the puppies.
That's really cool. My kid went up to White Horse to a horse camp one year, and she loved it. It was like such a cool thing. I don't know if she got to see sled dogs though. Do they have the sled dogs doing training on like wheeled carts at that time of year?
Spring and summer and fall, I'm pretty sure they do it on wheels, and in the winter, they do it on actual sleds.
Yeah, right, right. But it's so fun to see. Then they're having all these puppies and all that stuff's going on that time of year, right? It's really fun.
Yeah.
Super fun. Sounds like a great trip. You look forward to it every year,
yeah.
I'm guessing?
I look forward to it a lot.
Yeah, cool. All right.
Brendan, what do you like about selling cookies?
The fact that I can meet new people sometimes. It's really cool. And it also helps my troop go to different on different camping trips.
Yeah, sure. And then, so do you, when you sell the cookies, so you've kind of taken the orders for cookies already, but then when the cookies come in, like I see you sometimes over at Foodland, right, selling cookies and stuff like that. Do you guys do that stuff too?
Sometimes. My sister's troop actually sells at Fred Meyer's sometimes.
Okay, very good. Just anything to get those cookies into people's hands, right?
Right.
That's
so
the
at
thing.
The 11 o'clock tomorrow are our first booth sales that will be at Fred Meyer, AMP, or sorry, IGA, Super Bear, Western Auto every weekend.
Hitting it hard. Starting tomorrow.
So starting tomorrow, if people are jonesing for their Thin Mint Fix or Samoas and they haven't pre-ordered from their favorite little Girl Scout, they can find us at the supermarket, or Brown's Troop 4036 will be selling at the auction. So as they come in to buy
a
ticket to the auction, you can meet her troop, her cadet troop, there as well to buy some cookies.
So this is a fun thing. I was just like, this looks like a new flavor here, these Savannah Smiles.
Savannah, Georgia is where Girl Scouts USA was started. The first troop in the United States was in Savannah, Georgia, more than 100 years ago. So when they came out with a new flavor, a nice lemon flavor, they named it Savannah Smiles.
So would it be fair for me to give you a little pop quiz, Bronwyn, on the five skills that Girl Scouts developed through their years? Can you give me a couple of them?
No.
One of them?
I don't read the signs of the book.
You don't read the signs? How about, they're all really good. There's good all through life. These are all good. So one is goal setting. I think that's really good. You know, learning to set goals, mm-hmm. right? I think that's great. Decision making.
Mm-hmm.
Making good decisions. Do you know another one?
No.
This next one I really think is important. Money management. Right?
Yeah, that's actually really important.
It's really important. People skills.
Mm-hmm.
I got to always work on those. And then last one is business ethics. You know what that's getting at? Like doing business in a good, proper way that's fair to people, representing yourself well, that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's all really important stuff. You'll use that your whole life, right? And that's the whole point of Girl Scouts.
Absolutely. And the cookie program is a wonderful fundraiser. But even more importantly, it teaches those five skills to girls, and those skills last a lifetime.
So sometimes, even if you can't memorize it and like say it by heart, you're really learning all that stuff, whether you kind of know it or not.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's kind of what's going on. Well, Sue, we were saying that there's not only the auction coming up, and of course the cookie sales, which Girl Scouts is so famous for the great cookies, but also there's all kinds of other great, cool programs. One's about technology, is that what?
Absolutely. Girl Scouts of Alaska offers a program called, it's a one-day program, Women of Science and Technology Day, where women who are science and technology professionals in the community volunteer their day to share their skills and their passion with our Girl Scouts and with all the girls in the community. This year we will be at University of Alaska Southeast, and it should just be a terrific day where girls do hands-on projects. So they're not getting lectured at. It's not like school. They're doing hands-on projects with women in science and technology fields, and it's just a fantastic day.
Yeah, that sounds like a really cool thing.
Sure. It's April 2nd, and the school should be handing out the flyer. Today there is an in-service day, but starting Monday of next week. So parents can look for the blue flyer from Girl Scouts that has Women of Science and a little information on our day camp, and they were all delivered to the schools this past week to hopefully go out for distribution.
And every girl is welcome.
It's such a cool thing for young women to see women in science working in these technology areas and just kind of realizing that there's these great role models out there, especially here in this community.
Oh, especially in Juneau.
Yeah.
We have amazing women scientists from Rebecca Sosette at JADC or Emily Ferguson, one of a fish botanists who comes in and dissects fish with the girls. And I know,
cool.
But they love it. It's a fun after class. From Lego robotics to Southeast Veterinarian will have a clinic on teddy bear surgery this coming year. And just exciting things of different things. We never know exactly what the hands-on. One year we distracted DNA from strawberries. Lots of us studied about cat feline or feline DNA.
Very interesting.
But it's a great thing, so I encourage parents to look for the flyers. Your daughter doesn't have to be in a troop, and that's not the only way to participate in Girl Scouts, but it's for all girls in Juneau to really kind of get a hands-on science experience, and that's April 2nd.
Okay, well, let's go back to the auction real quick and just talk a little bit more about that. So that's happening tomorrow night. It's over at the Jack. It starts at 6 o'clock. And what can people expect when they go to the auction? What's going to be happening there?
Well, first, it's a lot of fun, and the entire community is welcome. We serve a light dinner. If you want dessert, you have to bid on the cake auction.
Oh, which is always fun.
Yeah,
always
great
fun, and those are really good.
And lots of the cakes that go for top price are made by girls.
Cool.
Which is terrific. And then we have both silent auction items, and the more expensive, fancier items go at what's called an outcry auction, where there's a real auctioneer up there, and they're doing the going, gone, and selling everything from airline tickets, trips to exotic places, experiences, wilderness adventures, all kinds of fun things.
So it's a big time happening auction, that part of it. And then there's also the silent auction, and there's a dessert auction.
And a dessert auction.
And there's some food. Is there like kind of music happening and stuff like that going on too?
There'll be a little music happening.
Sure.
There's a bar for people who want to imbibe a little bit and then bid even more. it's a good fundraising event.
Our auctioneers are Jesse Keel and Ron Clark, and they kind of have their own comedy routine going.
That's
on.
A good
the whole
team.
The team right there is amazing.
Jesse and Ron are going to
our auctioneers, so it's a lot of fun. They can visit in the front with the Troop 4036, who will be there in uniform selling their cookies, so they'll have that interaction. The girls will lead the Girl Scout Lawn, promise, and it should just be a great night.
Very good.
Our funnest fundraisers.
So much happening with the Girl Scouts. So the cookies are coming in tomorrow, so you can start seeing that. If you didn't get your order in already, there's still cookies out there. You can get them at all the kind of supermarkets in town starting tomorrow, right?
Correct.
And then the annual auction is tomorrow night, starts at 6 p.m. It's over at the Jack. Is there a fee to get – is there a tick $40 to get in? The tickets are $40 to get in, and then, of course, you're going to get great deals.
Correct.
I mean, that's what's going to happen. It's an auction. You're going to get these great deals and all this stuff, and you're going to come away with a dessert and dinner and fun, and Ron Clark and Jesse Keel, who are wild men, and a lot of fun. That's going to be really cool. And it's just going to be a great, fun time. You looking forward to it, Bronwyn?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be
fun. Are you going to be setting up cookies or selling cookies tomorrow?
Probably.
You sound ecstatic about that. No, it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun.
See, I just want to mention Girl Scouting for being involved starts in kindergarten all the way up through 12th grade. And in Juneau, we have about 350 Girl Scouts dispersed in between troops or just Juliet's. And if people are interested in getting their girls interested involved in Girl Scouting or wanting to be a Girl Scout leader, they can certainly call the Girl Scout office. And I'm going to give that number right now.
Sure.
So it's 586-1710, or they can visit the GirlScoutsOfAlaska.org website.
Very good.
And we'll try to make connections happen.
Well, Girl Scouts, it's always so much fun to talk to you guys, and so many great things going on with all the girls happening here. 750 girls participating in Juneau alone.
Oh,
350 in Juneau alone.
In Juneau, yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. Well, thanks so much. That's Sue Perlis, who's the CEO of Girl Scouts of Alaska. Thanks so much for coming in. And Tara Lee Reese Ellis and Bronwyn, thanks so much for coming in, too.
Andy, thanks for having
us. Yeah. Have a great auction and start selling those cookies. All right.
This is Bird Note. The bird life of Ecuador ranks among the richest in the world. Just the size of Nevada, Ecuador is home to 1,600 species of birds. That's twice the number in all of North America. Can this splendid diversity be preserved? One to take up this challenge is artist and naturalist Paul Greenfield, a longtime resident of Ecuador. Greenfield has a unique knowledge of Ecuador's birds. He painted each one of them for the first field guide to that country's birds. The book put ecotourism in Ecuador on the map in a big way. Greenfield has also helped create Ecuadorian conservation reserves, both large and small. He feels that smaller reserves of a few hundred acres may have the best chance for long-term success. Small reserves, such as the Mindo Cloud Forest Reserve, encourage local communities to play a full role in preserving and restoring habitat and enable farming to coexist with conservation. As Greenfield says, when you tie communities into knowing what ecotourism is about, and they begin to understand that the area and the birds belong to them, it builds pride very quickly. It's a duet, like these toucan barbets we're hearing, where each partner has an important role. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
And we're back in the studio, and with me right now are the improv group of B&B. They're here in town up from Portland. Thanks, guys, for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Can I say your real names?
For Please. Yeah.
Bill and Betsy.
You can.
Hi.
Hi.
Hey, Bill and Betsy. And Michael Christensen is here, too, from the Morally Impoverished
Yes
group that's here locally. And B&B, you guys are going to be performing tonight and tomorrow night at the Hangar Ballroom, 8 o'clock. And tell me just a little bit about it's improv, right?
Yes.
But then what's your kind of angle on improv? What do you like to construct out of?
Well, we've been married for 27 years,
so
we take that experience parlay that into our improv.
Every show starts with a based on the audience suggestion, we try to reach into our history and grab a story from our own past that relates to that subject. And then we use that story as a springboard for other ideas that might come out of what we talked about. I mean, so if we talked about a camping trip, maybe we'd start a scene in a canoe that wouldn't have anything to do with that trip, but you know, the canoe would be the springboard.
And then when you construct it, are you always playing a couple?
It can be a variety of things. I mean, we've played everything from like best friends to our last show in Cincinnati. We were a restaurateur or a server with one of the patrons that ended up having a torrid affair.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Which makes him a couple eventually.
Turns into a couple.
There's a lot of co-worker relationships and, it's one of my things that I seem to fall into a lot is playing archaeologists and adventurers and explorers and that kind of thing, whoever that person might be involved with.
Need a pith helmet. They've got to have that. Right. Yeah, right, right.
Yeah, so we get to play. I mean, it's nice being a married couple. I mean, other couples will, you know, spice up their relationship in different ways and play acting or cosplay, but we get to do that
in front of other people.
Yes. Right. When you say it that way, it sounds so horrible.
Yeah, for us, it's we get home and we're like, all right, be yourself, honey.
Yeah, that's now like, yeah, right. Well, that must be something that happens, like turning off or like getting back out. But it seems to me like improv is probably just, I mean, I guess at its best, it's a natural. It feels natural, right?
And so, well, and it's been natural, I think, for us. I mean, we're unusual. Most couples get together after they've started. They've already been improvisers and they get together. We started improvising at already being a couple, and fortunately for both of us, we enjoy it and are pretty decent at it. And so that makes it a little bit different, those nuances. So we were doing improv before we had a venue. We weren't doing it on stage. We were going into Walmart and being New Yorkers looking for a clock.
But is there part of being a couple, and especially a married couple who's been, you know, who's this has been part of your development as a couple, I would say, too. You know, it's part
huge,
of your life.
It's a huge change because, you know, this idea in improv that you always accept that someone else's idea is the way they see things, right? And in life, we don't really do that so much. You know, somebody says something, and say for politics especially, you're like, oh, that person's completely wrong. They don't understand anything. But in a relationship, you have to realize that what somebody else says to you is the way that the world feels to them. You have to kind of accept that, even if you don't agree with it. And that is what makes improv work, too. So it turns out that really did help our relationship a lot, especially with having kids.
Yeah. I was gonna sort of ask the flip side. Are there parts of doing improv that have been tough on the relationship in a way? Like, did something comes up during an act or something? You know what I mean?
Sure. That's a great question. I would say early on there was some
awkwardness or something.
Well, you know, because there's other couples we know of, and again, we were fortunate. I think we're on the same trajectory in terms of our career. We have other friends who one or the other doesn't do as well. And so how do you do that when they're getting invited to be in shows and the other person isn't?
Right.
Bummer. And we didn't experience that as much, but I think there was a couple of times that it did, that it was awkward. And we talked about it. I mean, the key thing is communication, and that's another thing that improv teaches you.
Yeah.
Not just talk, but listen is number one.
Yeah. Well, Mike, I'll just turn to you just briefly. You're morally impoverished, bringing in – this is so cool that you guys keep continuing to bring in this national talent. It's such a treat.
It is. It's really a treat for us because we – don't get to go out that much. So if we want to see improv, we have to bring it here. So, and it's a warm up to the festival in the spring.
Tell me a little bit. You guys have dates on that yet?
Yeah, the Alaska State Improv Festival is going to be the last weekend in April and the first through the 1st of May. And we've got Eric is going to put up on asiffest.com.
It's a wild weekend. It's like tons of stuff
people
going on
from
and workshops
all over,
and all kinds of stuff
workshops,
like that too.
People from all over America. It's going to be very exciting.
So you guys were saying that you've never been up here to Juneau before.
Yeah, it's first time to Alaska.
Yeah, first time to Alaska.
I wanted to come here since I was 10. Now I'm 51. I finally did it.
Yay!
Good job, me.
Hey, you!
All the rest of my life is just a coast from now. Like, woo!
Well, yeah, I mean, it's fascinating, though, isn't it? It's like, it's just a plane ride.
Yeah.
I mean,
and not a very long one.
Not at all, from Portland especially.
Right,
So much that we're coming back for the festival as well.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah,
so
you're twice in a year.
Have you guys been in Portland for a long time? Or
just celebrated 20 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, mm-hmm. And where from before that? Or
I'm originally from New York City.
Okay.
And I'm from Phoenix.
Okay, yeah.
And we met
in Portland?
No, we met on the internet before it was the internet.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, the internet existed, but this was before the web. And so the way you remember, like CompuServe and those kind of services back in the 80s, well, that's what we met on one of those.
You were 1556253 at CompuServe.com?
Kylie 123456, yeah, exactly. So we met, actually, I was in New York and he was in Phoenix. And it was a whirlwind. We met New Year's Eve in person after corresponding and talking on the phone and doing the interwebs thing. And then 2 days later, he proposed.
Wow, this is the old you've got mail days.
Yeah. 3 weeks later, we eloped, and 27 years later.
See, a cautionary tale right there.
Don't let this happen to you.
It's been nothing but improv since. Well, thanks so much for coming in. It sounds
Thank
like
you.
It's going to be a really fun show. What can people expect when they walk in? What's going to happen? What's the interaction? What should they be ready for?
We're going to ask them for a very brief nugget of a story of their own life or as a couple. So somebody will say, we went camping and got lost, or very small nugget, and we will use that as to find our own story.
Very cool. And do you do a number of those throughout the night,
there may be a connecting thread, and one of the things that we also do is we play each other's characters. So once characters are established, what you also see is the switch.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
she has a nasty habit of playing characters with voices too high for me. Which is always funny for you guys to watch me do.
Very good, very good. Well, it sounds like a blast. It's B&B. They're up from Portland. First time here in Alaska, so welcome them tonight at 8 o'clock or tomorrow night, 8 o'clock. It's happening at the Hangar Ballroom. Is there a charge?
It's $10.
$10 to get in?
Opening is seriously obnoxious and Cogs and Goggles.
All right, very good. So those are that's the opening acts for B&B. And thanks so much. It was great to meet you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for finally getting to Juneau.
Yay.
After 41 years of wanting to get here. All right. The show for today. Once again, the weather for the rest of the day, supposed to be rain showers tonight. Cloudy with a chance of rain showers in the morning for tomorrow, and then rain tomorrow night. Looks like a little bit of rain in the forecast for the rest of the weekend, and then mostly cloudy skies happening on Monday. Thanks to all my guests who came in today. We appreciate hearing from everyone, including John Kropik, who's going to be out at the Glacier Mendenhall Visitor Center tonight. That's going to be a really cool thing on Yellow Cedars out there. Check it out. Also, the Banff Mountain Film Festival happening Wednesday. Girl Scouts annual auctioning happening tomorrow night, and tonight at 8, and tomorrow night at 8, B&B Improv. It's a big weekend. Thanks so much for joining me.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on Translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
There is no one who is better prepared to provide America with the strong leadership that it needs, both at home and around the world, than Donald Trump.
A former rival falls in line. New Jersey's Chris Christie backs Trump.
For Friday, February 26th, this is All Things Considered.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Coming up, a look ahead to the Super Tuesday primaries with our political commentators.
Later, how the anti-crime politics of the 1990s are playing out in the Democratic primary race today.
No one wanted to be seen as being weak, and that continued to obviously feed the system of mass incarceration.
And after years of war, more than 2 million people have been displaced in South Sudan.
A lot of people still collect water from the river, and electricity, there's no electricity at all.
Plus the latest in the investigation of the mass shooting in Kansas.
Those stories in this hour, after the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Speer. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is endorsing Donald Trump. As NPR's Jessica Taylor reports, Christie is reversing course on his assessment of Trump, someone he had described months ago as the wrong person to be president.
Chris Christie was ready to let bygones be bygones as he introduced Trump ahead of his rally in Fort Worth.
Texas, I'm here today to proudly say I endorse Donald Trump for president of the United States.
Christie's support comes less than 2 weeks after he ended his own